In this episode, I'm speaking to Kirsty Wilson, the head of marketing and fundraising at Launchpad, Reading's leading homelessness charity, who support people without a place to live or who are at risk of losing their home. Hi, Kirsty.
Hi.
So what first made you want to get involved with Launchpad?
So I had been running a small charity in Reading called Connect Reading, which was about joining up businesses that wanted to support charities with venues or volunteers or resources and charities that needed that help. So I was a bit like Cilla Black, kind of making blind dates and introducing people to each other. And Launchpad was actually one of our members. And what I discovered about Launchpad was that they have this very holistic approach in that every single person that comes through their doors is treated like an individual. So it's not a conveyor belt. There's no one size fits all. It's about taking people in, finding out what their issues are and supporting them until they're back on their feet.
Amazing. And what are some common misconceptions that people have about homelessness and people who are becoming homeless?
So I think the classic myth about homelessness is that it's the guy on the corner with the dog who's begging, who's been rough sleeping. And homelessness draws no distinction between different people. So it doesn't matter what religion, gender, sexuality you are, it can hit anybody. And it's never a choice. I think that's the other myth. Is that people have somehow put themselves on this path. It could be anything from a relationship breakdown, mental health problems. It could be you're on a 0 hours contract. There's loads of different factors that could mean that you could end up in that situation yourself. And I think the one thing the pandemic taught us was that life is very, very precarious. It can happen to anybody. So we help a lot of young professionals who've come to Reading and can't afford to pay the rent. They've got a good job, but they end up sofa surfing. They probably don't consider themselves to be homeless, but they are, and we can help them. It could be a single mum who's in a B&B waiting for a council house. There's a number of different reasons why people would come to see us. And we work in a number of different ways to try and get them, like I said, back on their feet and to a position where they're in safe and secure accommodation.
That's really interesting because I think a lot of people associate homelessness with unemployment.
Yeah.
But it's actually not as common.
No, so we have a lot more people coming to see us now who are professionals, who have very well-paid jobs because the mortgage rises. They're having issues because their landlord has decided that they actually want to sell up. So there's a big issue with Section 21 evictions at the moment. So a landlord can just tell you to leave the property without having to give you a specific reason. There's a lot of changes to the health and safety levels that landlords have to adhere to now as well, which means landlords are having to invest in putting additional things into their properties. And again, a lot of landlords are deciding not to make that investment and sell up. So there's a dearth of affordable housing in Reading anyway. And the cost of living, the mortgage rises are all just making the situation worse, really.
Do you have to be completely homeless before seeking support from Launchpad?
No, so we work in three different ways. The first thing we do is to try and prevent homelessness happening in the first place. So if somebody's having issues with their landlord, they fear that they're going to be evicted, they're in the process of being evicted, they're worried about their benefits or they're not actually on benefits and not sure what they're entitled to, they can come to us. So we do a drop-in on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday from 10 till 2. It's free, it's confidential, and anybody can come to us and hopefully we can stop a problem becoming a crisis. Second thing we do is providing homes. So we have bed spaces for over 100 people across Reading. And when somebody comes into one of our houses, they're provided with a support worker. So typically they'll stay with us for between 6 and 12 months. And that support worker will sit down with them and put together a bespoke plan to find out how they ended up where they are and what needs to be done to get them back on their feet and back out into the private rented sector. And then the last thing we do is just after the pandemic, we opened Reading's first work and life skills centre. So the last piece of the jigsaw is obviously getting somebody back into training or education or employment so they can then get a job and they can sustain a rent. And we provide everything from CV workshops, interview practice, resilience training, down to more kind of therapeutic activities like gardening and art therapy and that kind of thing. We have a laundrette in the centre so people can come in and do their washing while they're doing a course. We have a training kitchen so people can come and either learn how to cook for themselves or they can do a food hygiene certificate. And again, it will help them towards employment. And we actually have paired up with Anonymous Coffee, who are a local coffee producer, who provide a 6-week course on barista training, because there are so many coffee shops in Reading that hopefully someone can get a job that way. So we, like I said, we offer this range of things to get people fully back on their feet.
Wow. So if someone isn't homeless and say can live with their parents, they're not at risk of being completely homeless, can they still come to the centre and learn things and get help anyway?
Yeah, they can come to us and just talk about what the options are. If they are having issues, then we'll talk them through what the pathway is to get our support. So everybody is assessed every week. We have a meeting with other partner agencies like Salvation Army and St Mungo's and the council to work out who those people are that need help and at what stage they can come into us.
And what does Launchpad do to stop misconceptions about homelessness and support people in a positive way?
So we do a lot of talks and visits to schools and colleges and scout groups and businesses, go in and talk to people about the work that we do, like you said, the myths around homelessness, and also about how they can support us. So it could be coming to volunteer for us, it could obviously be fundraising, it could be donating items to one of our centres. So we're always looking for new laptops, for example. But it's just about getting out there, telling people that we're here. That's the one thing that I'm telling businesses at the moment is if they do nothing else, it's to tell their friends and family and colleagues that we're here. Because the more people know about us, like I said, we're seeing a lot more people who probably would never consider that they'd need to come and talk to a homeless charity.
And what would you say to people who were nervous about coming to speak to a homelessness charity because of the stigma around it?
I think it's you know, come and talk to us. We've seen everything. We've been around a long time. We were actually established in 1979 by a group of Reading University students who set up a soup kitchen and then realised that actually it was a safe and secure home that was the most important thing. But all our staff are incredibly professional. Like I said, it's free. It's confidential. You'll be taken into a confidential space. Nobody else will be privy to what's going on in your life. And we have seen everything, so we wouldn't be shocked, and we'll probably be able to help you.
And with mortgages going up and rents going up, have you come full circle? Do you help a lot of Reading Uni students now?
We have seen Reading University students. I think again it's getting people to know that we're here. We have a really good relationship with the university and with the Students' Union. The Vice-Chancellor is actually one of our patrons, so he supports us a lot. And we're also having conversations at the moment about trying to get the first student big sleep out actually on campus, maybe next year. So that would be where students can sleep out for one night. Again, it's not going to try and replicate homelessness, but it'll give people a taste and raise money for Launchpad and raise awareness about what we do.
So you've seen a 20% decrease in funding with a 30% increase in people needing support.
Yeah.
What would you say has caused this and why now?
I think it's just that perfect storm of a cost of living crisis, mortgage rises. So we have that combination of people are being obviously a lot more careful with their money. They're concerned about keeping a roof over their heads. They're concerned about paying their bills. So I think a lot more people we've had who have either suspended their regular monthly payment or just are not making a donation this year. But at the same time, as you say, demand has risen because so many people are being affected. So our services are seeing a lot more people day in, day out. Our drop-in service, where people can just come three times a week, has actually gone up by 42%. And that's obviously the front door. That's where the most help is needed.
And how much of a say would you say the pandemic's had with, you know, people stuck inside their homes? And, you know, if you don't have a home during a lockdown, yeah, what do you do?
So during lockdown, the government actually implemented a project called Everyone In, and they took everybody off the streets and put them into bed and breakfast, into hotels. But then the challenge was when the pandemic ended, those people were back out again. And where possible, they were rehoused. But as I said, it's that combination of lack of affordable housing and also lack of funding. So even the local authority have had, you know, numerous cuts over the last few years. So they're really, really struggling to support people too. So it's about trying to get to people early. Prevention is better than cure. So if we can help that happen. But like I said, we have these rooms. We've just bought another property. So we'll be having another 6 bed spaces available hopefully in the next few months, and they will be for people who are ready to move on from our supported accommodation, who can pay rent so that we free up those spaces for people who need it more.
And what is your best advice for people who are renting and finding landlords are increasing their rent so much that it's unaffordable?
I think it's about challenging where you feel comfortable doing so. I think it's coming to people like us and getting advice about what your rights are. There are some lovely landlords. Unfortunately, there are also some very unscrupulous landlords. So what you're being told may not necessarily be right. So I would say just come and get advice. We actually provide free legal advice as well. We had a guy who came 2 or 3 months ago who was literally half an hour away from being evicted. And he hadn't told anybody. He was very embarrassed, very ashamed of the situation he was in. And our in-house solicitor literally ran to the courts and managed to get an 8-week extension so we could work with him to try and keep him in his home. So it's about just reaching out, come and get some advice, and hopefully we can help you.
And do you think it's quite easy for landlords to, you know, lie or exaggerate to their tenants, especially if they're younger, if they're just starting out on the property ladder? Do you think it's quite easy for them to lie, because they almost think they'll just believe what I say?
Like I said, I think that, you know, there's good landlords and bad landlords. And I think if it's your first time renting property, or it's the first time that you're dealing with that kind of relationship, then I think it can be maybe easier to have the wool pulled over your eyes, which is why it's always good to try and get advice. I know the Students' Union gives really good advice here for students. But I think it's about, yeah, trying to be canny, reading up. There's a lot of information online about your rights as a tenant. I know when I was a student, we had a landlord that would let himself in occasionally, which is completely not allowed. But it's just about making sure before you sign any contract, you get it checked. Make sure you look online about what your rights are. And if in doubt, then reach out to one of the agencies that can help you.
So if a student or someone who was new to renting came to Launchpad and said, can you have a look over my tenancy agreement? Is that something that you could help with?
We would probably direct them to Systems Advice, just because of the sheer number of people that we're seeing. So again, Systems Advice are great. Communicare are also really good down at Sandwich Junction. And they have trained advisors that can look through things like that for you.
And what happens if your landlord is selling the property that you are renting?
Like I said, unfortunately, you don't have a lot of recourse. With the Section 21 evictions in place, they can give you notice without having to give a specific reason. So it's just a case of basically trying to find some new accommodation. I know that the government have been looking at changing the legislation, but it's been very slow in happening. And obviously with everything shut over the summer, it's not helpful. But I would just make sure that you read, do your research, find out what your rights are. It may be that actually it's completely within their power to do what they're doing, in which case I think it's just come and get advice.
And what's your view on it? Do you think the government need to be a bit more active with their reform and work a bit faster?
I think it would always be good if things happen faster. I think that's one of the challenges with homelessness, is there are so many different things at government level that need to change. Even things like provision of more rehab facilities. Yeah, there's a lot that can be changed. I know there are there's been lots of things that are done. There was a lot of really good learnings out of lockdown from when we had everyone in. But the challenges still remain. In an ideal world, we wouldn't exist. If homelessness didn't exist, Launchpad wouldn't be needed. And the fact that we've been around for as long as we have is actually quite sad.
And so would you say your goal is to not exist, essentially?
In an ideal world, I doubt our staff would thank me for saying that. But yeah, we wouldn't be needed if homelessness didn't exist, then Launchpad wouldn't be around.
And everyone's talking a lot about something that's quite big and quite scary, this mortgage crisis that we're in. What exactly is the mortgage crisis, and why is it there, and what can people do if they find themselves falling behind on their mortgage?
So it's to do with the bank interest rates and work that's being done to try and control inflation and make the economy a bit more stable. However, if people are finding that they're having difficulties, the best thing to do first is talk to your lender. So a lot of banks and building societies are more than aware of what's happening, and you can have a conversation about mortgage holidays or different ways of paying. yeah, I think it same goes with kind of energy providers. I think that's not helping as well. So the energy cap apparently is lowering over winter, but potentially could go up in January again. So I think it's about not being afraid to ask for help and being open with your issues. The longer you leave a problem, the more it can fester and become unworkable.
And is there a particular age group that you find as a charity needs the most help?
Actually, kind of between kind of 40 and 50. So we're seeing a lot of older people. We see a lot of couples as well as families now as well. And one of the challenges is making sure that there is the right accommodation for people. So at the moment, if we have a man in his mid-50s who's looking to move on from our accommodation, because of the lack of affordable housing in Reading, we're actually having to say you might have to just consider a room in a shared house, which at that age you don't expect to have to do that again.
It's interesting because I saw a statistic this summer, I think it was from the Times, that said 4 in 10 people under 40 can't see themselves getting on the property ladder in this decade, in the next decade, which I find really interesting because I think there's a stigma about, especially, you know, graduating university or getting a job, and then you immediately think the next step is moving house. But it's, you know, it seems very unachievable nowadays. What do you think about that?
It does. However, I think it's quite a British thing to want to own your own property. So in Europe, kind of the done thing is you rent your property. It's kind of standard. And I think it's maybe a British thing. It might be something we just need to get used to, I think. It is incredibly sad, you know, just within one generation, that, you know, I can't see my children being able to buy their own property. And at this point in time, there's no way I could help them do that. So it is a strange situation to be in. And I think, yeah, I think it is sad, but it is one that is quite common, I think, around the rest of the world.
So do you think expectation is a negative thing? Do you think we should be changing the expectation and realise that it's not a bad thing if you can't own your own property?
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that, I think. It's not necessarily a marker of success anymore. I think even just being able to pay your rent at the moment is a mark of success. But I think it is very, very hard, especially when you see your parents and your grandparents in their own property. And it is, you know, it's an investment. It's something that you eventually will own and will be yours. And obviously you can't say that with rent. It's very strange that we're in this situation, I think.
And in terms of, in comparison to other places in the country, do you think Reading has a homelessness crisis? Do you think it's bad compared to other places in the UK?
I think everybody has seen a boom, unfortunately. There's been a growth across the country, again, because of the pandemic, because people have lost their jobs after being furloughed, because rent has gone up. Like I said, there's multitude of factors. I think it's more visible in Reading because we're quite a big town, and I think we do get people who potentially, especially for begging, who come from different areas to Reading because Reading is so generous. I mean, we are actually a very kind, a very generous town, which is absolutely amazing. So I think begging seems to make it more visible. However, people need to be aware that someone who's begging doesn't necessarily not have a roof over their heads. So if you get stopped in the town centre and someone asks for money for a bed for the night, none of the bed for the nights charge. And I think one of the challenges we have is that drugs are so cheap. So you can buy a bag of heroin for the same that you could pay for a packet of 20 cigarettes, for instance. And if you've got mental health problems and you've been out on the streets, and that's something that you will turn to. So the challenge with giving money to someone who's begging is you don't know what they're going to be using it for. And the majority of people who are begging in Reading do have somewhere to stay.
So would you say there's a wrong thing and a right thing to do if you're walking along Reading town centre and you see someone begging or on the street or asking you for something? What's the sort of guide to do in that situation? Because I think a lot of people feel bad because you don't know what to do. You sort of panic, and you don't want to, you know, obviously you don't want to ignore them.
No.
You know, you just don't know what to do.
No, exactly. And you never know someone's situation. I think, like I said, people are incredibly, incredibly generous, and far by it for me to tell anybody how to spend their money. But what we advise is the best thing to do is probably ask them if they'd like something to eat or something to drink, and provide them with some food. And there is a really amazing app that you can download called StreetLink, which is nationwide. And if you see someone begging or someone sleeping in a doorway and you're concerned about them, what you can do is log into the app and put a description of what they look like, some information about where you saw them. And that information goes to all the local agencies who go in and check in on people who live on the streets. 9 times out of 10, they'll probably be known to the agencies. But it just means that you've got something that you can do that makes you feel like you're helping. You don't have to engage with the person. You can literally just input the information into the app, and you can do it anonymously if you want to. But that's just a little something that you can do that will help.
What do you as a charity hope to do with more funding?
With more funding, we'd like to buy more property. So what we tend to do is we build up our reserves of funding, we buy more property, we go back to zero, and then we start all over again. So like I said, we've just purchased a property. We're looking to potentially buy another one in the next few months, because the wider that we can build our portfolio, the more people we can help. It's that simple.
And as head of marketing and fundraising for Launchpad, what's most important to you?
Just getting our name out there. People knowing that we're here, so that people can come to us and they know that we're here and that we can make a difference. So like I said, it's about telling people we're here. We're trying to get people to share our content on social media, because again, it just increases our reach. It means more people will see the services that we offer. It's just about getting our name out there and getting people to associate it with help.
And how can people get involved?
So you can come along to a fundraising event. We have a range of events on our website that's always changing. Christmas, we have our amazing Christmas Carol service, which should be this year at the Town Hall again. You can fundraise for us. So if you're a keen runner or you play five-a-side football and you're involved in tournaments and challenges and things, if you would do it and raise money for Launchpad, that would be amazing. We have community groups who do bake sales and big sleep outs. We have gamers who will do 24-hour gamathons online and stream it on Twitch so other people can get involved. Everything and anything that will help us raise our profile, raise funds, and you can come and volunteer. So you can come and do a couple of hours helping us set up for an event. You can come and do some tin rattling at the station at Christmas. Or if you want to do long-term volunteering, we're always looking for people who can give us a couple of hours a week and maybe come and help the fundraising team with some admin or come and help HR. There's lots of different volunteering roles. So again, if you look on our website, all the current needs that we have are on there.
Amazing. And how can people get in touch? How can people find you?
So we are on Twitter, or X, as I believe it is now. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. You can visit our website, and our offices are actually on Friar Street next to Nando's. So if you go down the alley next to Nando's, you'll see brightly coloured doors, and that's where our drop-in is.
And what's your username on Instagram, X, etc.?
Launchpad RDG.
Lovely. So thank you so much for your time, Kirsty.
Thank you for having me.
If you're interested in Launchpad and want to find out more, you can also visit their website at launchpadreading.org.uk.